KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Not to correct you, Mr. Kelly, but it was 9:07:21 seconds. Come on, dude. Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline, and thanks for being there. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You can get in line with your questions, concerns, or comments. Again, thanks for having me on your show. If you were not there, I certainly would not be here. We can talk about plant selection, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds. Annuals. I haven't seen the annuals a little bit early, I know, in the garden centers, which would be pansies for the most part. There's a few other ones, but the pansies are the one that historically we always think of in the springtime. The bulbs, how about your bulbs? Have you been out to take a look at your spring flowering bulbs? Are they coming up through the surface mulch or whatever you happen to have them in? And bulbs. Garden centers may start to be, or they'll start having bulbs, summer bulbs, like cannas and elephant ears and things like that. Right now, what they're going to have asparagus roots, and they're going to have rhubarb as well. Other edibles, starting seed. If you want to start some seed from vegetable plants or annuals type things, this is the time of year you want to do it. How's your ground cover doing? A lot of the broadleaf, you know, ground covers like periwinkle, it looks pretty good because it hovers really close to the ground. But I've seen some burn on several different types of ground covering types, euonymus. I've seen it also on some ivies and things like that. It's tip burn and things like that. It shouldn't affect the plants entirely. So it's just kind of like a winter burn on your skin or something along that line. Or it's like sunburn, only it's, you know, the plant material, it's during the wintertime. And plant your house plants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, your trees, your shrubs, your vines, or your water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, or opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but just for you to consider. Greg is producing again today. Greg's got a bad cold or something, so he's spreading the germs all over the place. I'm already starting to sneeze. Thanks, Greg. I really appreciate that. But during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk, where I come to your home and I address all the questions that you may have. I take a look around for other things that you may not have thought of, and I try to make it so your landscape can be a little bit more aesthetic, you know, for you. A little, solve some of the problems or whatever it happens to be. You can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com, the homepage, my email address, which I recommend that over calling me. Again, there's a gentleman from Redbud, Illinois, that we have been playing ping pong phone-wise for quite a while. And we can schedule a walk and talk, and I'll come over to your home and share my experience in the great outdoors. And now, a special recognition for individual groups or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. The tip of the trowel today goes out to, actually, three people here on staff at the Intercom radio stations, Cody Grissom, Valerie Buckley, and Jacob Masick. These are, one of them's a salesperson, others are back behind the scenes people that keep everything flowing. You don't know how complicated this is. I can come and I can throw adjectives all over the place, but there's a lot of different work that goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, I always mention Greg because he's in here producing. But these other three people, they're doing things that they probably never even get mentioned. Now, I hope the FCC or something doesn't get on me for mentioning their names. But anyway, they've really made it, you know, easier for me in lots of different kinds of circumstances. Other tip of the trowel also goes out to the Richmond Heights Garden Club, the Rose Society of Greater St. Louis, the St. Charles County Rose Society, the St. Louis Evening Herbalist, the St. Louis Horticultural Society, the St. Louis Water Garden Society. Now, you say, well, that's great you mentioned these things. What you can do is go to Missouri Botanical Garden website, mobot.org, and they will list all the plant societies that happen to be in this region. And there are a lot. So if you got any kind of interest in plant material at all, and maybe you don't even know if you do, but you saw something and you're just curious about it, you can attend a meeting and you may end up going every month. You may end up just going to this one once and then going to a different one. But you talk about a knowledgeable group. The people at these plant societies, they are extremely knowledgeable, whether it's about daylilies, whether it's about herbs, whether it's about any kind of roses. It's just amazing. So consider going to a garden club and plant society. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We will be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones. We're headed 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you go out in your yard and you see some broadleaf weed, that just means something that doesn't look like a skinny little weed like grass, skinny blade, I should say. And you see these little things, probably the size of erasers or so, and a lot of them got burnt by the cold. That's chickweed. But these plants, these are annual weeds, and guess what? They can get burnt on the foliage and everything else, but they're going to start flowering when the weather starts changing a little bit, and they're going to drop a lot of seeds. So this is something you got to be conscious of. Even though you think, oh, good, they look at that. Those weeds, they got burnt, so they're probably not going to come back. Don't fool yourself. Let's go out to West County and see what's going on in John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike. I want to say thanks for a really interesting and very informative program.
Well, thank you.
I have two questions for you.
Sure.
One, a friend of mine gave me some compost that had periwinkle or vinca in it. I put it in several different places in my yard about 5 or 7 years ago, and it's an extremely invasive plant. I've tried to control it with a lawnmower. I've tried to control it with glyphosate. I've had grandchildren come out and spade the area. Nothing controls vinca, and it continues to spread. How can I control it? That's
basically
question number one. Question number two, I enjoy growing Phalaenopsis and Cattleya orchids. I'd love to try some cymbidiums. What kind of hints would you give to me in being successful in growing cymbidium orchids?
Basically, it's pretty much the same kind of care. I mean, the orchids are, even the ones that are, let's say grown in bark, in bark versus ones that are grown in soil, they're all pretty much universal as far as the care goes.
Right. I hang my Phalaenopsis and Cattleya in a shaded area from tree limbs or whatever.
Right.
That's not the way I handle cymbidiums, is it?
No. You don't need to do that. They're going to be more or less a potted plant. So you don't, so the cymbidiums are just, they're still of the same genre, but you can just leave them and sort of mix them in with other plants to keep the humidity, high. So leave them in that pot and, again, with any of them, though, just don't put them out in direct sunlight because they're going to get sunburned.
Right, right. How about the vinca?
Vinca, it's a broadleaf evergreen. And it is invasive. That's why it's sold as a ground cover. If you've got specific spots where if somebody can go out there, I don't know how invasive it is or how much that you have, but it's not going to, what you're going to have to do is pry it up out through the lawn or whatever it's growing in and crush the leaves and then paint Roundup right onto it. I know you said you've used Roundup before, but you got to, open up some wounds, stomp
That's
on
what
it.
That's what I thought the lawnmower would do. I cut it with a lawnmower, and then I applied glyphosate, and that doesn't control it.
No,
maybe
but
I'm applying it the wrong time of the year. I'm doing it in the spring.
Yeah, it's too.
When the plant is growing.
The periwinkle is too flat. I don't think your mower is doing a thing. If you have your mower low enough to wound the vinca, then you're going to scalp everything else that's in that area.
I've got beds of periwinkle. They're, 20 feet long and 6 feet wide.
And so basically, you get the kids out there to stomp on them. If you got golf shoes with spikes or anything like that, and as soon as you make the wounds, that's when you got to put the Roundup on them.
Thanks very much.
Yep. And it's going to be a tough, if you got this much of it, it's going to be a lot of work. There's no getting around it. And again, nothing's going to happen in 1 year. That's why I keep saying this is a marathon that goes on and on and on and on. So you can dig it as well. So digging it with like a digging fork versus a shovel, you can probably pry it up and get it, get rid of it, some of it that way. So now let's go to Chesterfield, very close to West St. Louis County, and that's where Mary lives. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I sort of have this message for Brian Kelly. He said something that you can't grow flowers in the snow. You might remind him about snowdrops, the galanthus bulbs.
Sure.
Because mine are blooming. They've been blooming for some time.
Wow.
So you might want to mention that. Now, I do have a problem.
Well, there's another plant, too, the Helleborus, the Lenten rose.
Right.
So they're great.
Yes, they are, and they come in so many new, pretty colors.
Right.
My problem is I love rhubarb. I cannot grow it. I've tried off and on. Please give me some good advice.
Well, probably you're going to buy a bare root. It's going to be at the garden center. I would, for the first couple of years, grow it in pots until it really gets fully established. And then, you know, may take a couple of years, you know, put it in like a 3 or 5 gallon pot with potting mix for starting plants. Grow it in there, you know, put it in the sun, fertilize it as you routinely would if it was in the ground. And then after a couple of years, then move it into a garden space.
Okay, I did have some in a. I tried the pot. However, I had to go someplace and I didn't keep it watered. Well, I'm going to try again. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye.
You do the very same thing. Yeah, it's not an easy one to grow. We all think it is. I mean, you get this chunk of the root, and you'll start to see the leaves come up, and you think, all right. But then, you know, for a long period of time, it's going to take, I think it's probably any place between 3 and 7 years before the stalks are going to get big enough to actually, and enough stalks to really create anything. But in the pot, grow it in the pot, and then get it into garden space where the garden space has been highly, let's say, changed structurally and everything else with compost. So in other words, it has to be organically rich soil. That's going to be the best thing for your rhubarb. And now let's go to Penelope, and Penelope lives in Baldwin. Hi, Penelope.
Hi, Mike. Hey, thanks for taking my call,
sure.
And I love your show. I have a mushroom situation in my front lawn. They're ugly. They're not the cute little white mushrooms. These are like brown, curly, and they're everywhere. But it's only like spring, summer, it's the weirdest thing. Like right now, they're not around.
Right.
But, I mean, like, they have spread throughout the whole front yard.
My guess is that you've had a tree removed, or you've got some trees in your yard. Is that the case or not?
I do. I have a beautiful red bud in the front.
Yeah, but that shouldn't be enough. Basically, the type of mushrooms that you're describing are ones that kind of grow off dead root systems of usually trees, or have you had your lawn dethatched?
No, uh-uh.
So they can grow off the root systems, dead root systems of your tree.
I do have some roots that are kind of showing through
right.
the lawn, you know, so maybe that's what it is.
And, you know, and the thatch, so get your lawn dethatched as well.
Okay.
And so all that stuff just grows on dead plant material. And
well,
mushrooms.
Any research I do, it says, oh, it's good. It's good that you have mushrooms in your lawn. And I'm like, they're
really?
So ugly.
That's a good one. I never heard of. But, I mean, there's nothing really. What you can do, you can kick them and do all this other stuff. But, I mean, it's actually.
Like, I can pick a bucket of them.
Right. But basically, I mean, it's growing off something. So it's something below the surface. You could dig down whenever they start coming up, dig down and just see where they're actually, I mean, do it gently
okay.
so you don't knock them off and find out exactly what they're growing on.
Okay, but dethatching the lawn would help.
Yes, because you're getting rid of thatch is just old dead plant material, and that's what these characters grow on.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Sure. And thanks to Penelope. And Penelope, oops, looks like somebody else has just dropped. So thanks, Penelope. But other things this time of year that you need to be watching out for from a weed standpoint, you just heard me talking about the chickweed and everything else. If you do have questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. The cool season weeds, now this can be problematic. If you've had a whole lot of cool season weeds in your lawn, you've got to go after them like in August. But that means during that time, you cannot put grass seed out. So you've got to decide what's most important. Do you want to get rid of these weeds, the cool season weeds, which include henbit, dead nettle, the chickweed, as I said before, the annual bluegrass, the prickly lettuce, the Persian speedwell, so it's a type of veronica, rabbit's foot clover, shepherd's purse. Those are the main ones that I see when I'm looking just around in general, whether I'm just walking through a park or anything else. They're rampant. I mean, the chickweed, it's just totally. So you have to decide, because pre-emergence kill any kind of seeds germinating. So you cannot put down lawn seed at the same time that you're going after the other weed seeds. It's a waste of your money. So just don't do that. But if you go out and look at your lawn right now and you see things that are not, the annual bluegrass is going to be like a clump. It's not going to grow like a regular grass, like a bluegrass. So even though it's called annual bluegrass, it's a clump grower, and they're going to be just individual sprigs that kind of come up, in locations. I actually still have some in my zoysia. And so I just kind of leave some of it because I want to see what's going to happen with it. And, when I start to see it seed, then I dig it up at that time. But use a pre-emergent as well. Let's see. Joyce lives in Creepcourt. Joyce, how are you today?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have a huge white pine next to my house, and it overlaps the guttering and stuff like that. And it's probably twice the size of the house. And so I've had a couple of tree people come out, and at first I thought about taking it down. I hate to do that, but I've had a couple suggestions. One is to lift the canopy of the tree up to the gutter line, so to speak, from the bottom, and then also to trim around. And they also talked about these huge limbs. In the wintertime, if we really had a bad ice storm, they could break because they're so long. And so then I've also thought about just getting guttering on that side of the house that would, because we've had our gutter clogged from, we have a covering, but it's got little holes in it, so
right.
Pine needles fit in it. So what would you suggest about this huge pine as far as trimming? And appreciate your expertise in that regard.
Right. Well, limbing the tree up is not going to do anything. That's going to encourage the growth of the branches that are up over your roof to grow even more. So that doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay.
So, I don't understand the logic of that. To me, there is no really gutter cover that's going to be able to eliminate this kind of problem. If this pine, you know how many needles it drops and everything else, plus the pine cones. Now, the guttering cover would certainly keep the pine cones from getting in there, but I would give this some serious consideration to having the tree taken down just to eliminate the problem, because I think everything else that you might try, new guttering and all this, is going to be like a finger in the dike kind of thing that you may have some success with in certain years, but other years you're not going to have success. It sounds like whoever originally planted this didn't understand mature size of plants, and that happens so much. It's just, I can't believe how much it happens, and it continues to. But I think you're just, there's no way to prune this that's going to make really all that much difference at all.
And I realize pine needles blow.
Yes.
So, it does. They blow, and the pine cones go far away from the tree, too.
Absolutely. Like 20, 30, 40 feet away from the tree, depending upon how high the tree is.
Yeah. So just like the kind of guttering cover, not guttering, but cover.
Right.
Some of those wouldn't prevent the pine needles from going down.
Well, some of them, it may. I'm not convinced that they, it's going to be all that effective. But you can, call a couple different gardening companies and just, have them come out and, explain to you. Some of them are almost like solid. So in other words, the pine needles will be on your roof, then they're going to wash down and then wash over the gutter covering. But to me, I don't know how that actually works, because I don't know how the water from your roof then would get into your gutter to get rid of it there. Does it just come cascading over the side of your house? That doesn't make sense.
I wouldn't want that either.
Yeah. You just got a really very difficult situation. And if it's a larger tree, it's going to be expensive to get rid of. But the heartache and the mental effort that you're spending, I don't know if it's worth it or not. So
yeah, okay.
That's kind of what you're looking at.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your time.
Sure. Thanks, Joyce. And if anybody has any questions after the break, you can give us a call at call us before the break, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, Mr. What's your name?
It hasn't been that long.
You were only in here 5 minutes ago.
No, it's a half hour, actually.
Okay.
And this time I bring good news. The accident northbound 55 at 3200 South Broadway is clear, and that traffic's moving again. They just took the last vehicles away from westbound 64 at McKnight, so that's going to be backed up for a little while, but get better. The 270 accident southbound at Manchester is off on the right shoulder, and the northbound one is still blocking the right lane to the off-ramp. And this just in, we're now under a winter weather advisory.
What?
Until 1 o'clock.
Oh.
So this is going to stick around a little while longer.
Ah.
Okay.
So you must be smart. You don't even have any notes, or is it on the computer screen?
I just been looking at it for an hour, so it's kind of stuck in my head.
You're very smart.
Well, long as I fool you.
Yeah.
And the bosses.
Right. Very true. Well, thanks, Brian. And joining us right now is Molly Clifford. Molly Clifford is Antilier, and boy, oh boy, you're working through this whole thing. Actually, there's going to be a British gardening expert and media personality, Alan Gray, is going to be coming to St. Louis April 13th and 14th. And Molly, you're kind of coordinating this whole thing, or exactly what is your role in this?
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Well, thank you for having me
sure.
on, especially on this beautiful snowy morning.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. We are very fortunate at Church of St. Michael and St. George on Wydown in Clayton to be hosting Alan Gray, who is a designer coming from England. He runs the Old Vicarage Gardens in East Ruston. He has developed the most beautiful arrangement of gardens that are a part now of the Royal Horticultural Society. And he's coming to give an atelier, which is a workshop, here at our church at St. Michael and St. George in April on the 13th and 14th. He will be talking about his garden, but he also designs the flowers for the nearby cathedral in Norwich in England. So he has the combination of being a flower designer and a gardener. He also runs a weekly radio educational program in England, and he's a writer. So he's very experienced. And we chose him because our flower guild at St. Michael and St. George is now developing a program where we want to develop the gardens on our property and use the flowers from the gardens on the altar. So the Altar Guild is sponsoring this. It's a two-day workshop, and we think a lot of people would benefit from coming, not only because they would learn about Alan's gardens in England and what they're about, but because he will show how he arranges the flowers and uses them in church. And the idea would be that people, if they're interested in flower design or gardening, they would have lots of opportunities to talk to him. But also, it gives people an idea of the meaning of flowers for the various events that come up in our lives. And we don't often think about that before those events occur. So this would be an opportunity for people to understand how flowers can look in a church, what kind of beautiful designs they can have, bouquets for weddings or funeral arrangements, large events. He will be designing all of those, keeping in mind that you can find flowers from your garden as well as flowers from a market.
Yeah, one question for you. Now, when he comes, how do people even, I mean, it's April 13th and 14th, which is a little while. I mean, it's like basically 2 months away. How do they just show up? I mean, do you have to get tickets or reservations?
You have to have a reservation, and we have a website that is the St. Michael and St. George website, that if you just go on that, Church of St. Michael and St. George, you can just Google it.
Okay.
And look under events and then find the Flower Arrangement Atelier. It's A-T-E-L-I-E-R. It's a French word. And again, we were sort of searching for a word that would represent a broader and deeper meaning of flower usage for those special times in our lives. So so the way to get the ticket is to go onto the website. You can sign up online, or you can request an invitation. We have really beautiful, informative invitations that we're sending out. We've just sent a bunch out to Flower Guild, church Flower Guilds, and to garden clubs, but there may be other people who'd like one. Just call the church or give us your information on the website.
Okay, one last thing before I let you go. Well, one other thing, too. I see he's been into gardening since he was 4 years old.
So. Oh, yeah. He started with his grandmother. Apparently, his grandmother taught him all about gardening, and it's been a lifelong, first it was a fascination, and then he really developed that and is very well known in England. And he's very well known both in the garden community and, interestingly, in the church community, because he does very beautiful arrangements for the cathedral there.
Right. Again, Molly, how do people get tickets?
They get tickets by either going on to the website for the Church of St. Michael and St. George in Clayton. Just go onto the website, look under the header events. And then under that, you'll see the Flower Arrangement Atelier.
Great. Well, thanks, Molly. It sounds like a great event. And the gentleman coming all the way from England, this should be really exciting. And especially, he'll love St. Louis, you know, because mid-April is going to be a time when the city is absolutely spectacular.
It's going to be beautiful.
Yes. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you so much.
Yep. And okay. Now let's go back to the phones and let's see if we can get to Sean. And Sean lives in Maryland Heights. Sean, how are you? Oh, Shane, sorry.
I'm doing well. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
Shane.
Sorry.
That's okay. I've been called worse.
Me too.
Hey, I was just calling about the lady before about the big white pine in her next to her house and
right.
The gutters and all the issues that she was having. I live in Maryland Heights, and we have a big pine tree next to our house. We also have the gumball trees and, the ones that do the whirly bird. And there is actually a product out there, because we were thinking about cutting all those down. And we saw this at the home show. It's called Leaf Filter, LeafFilter, Leaf Filter. It's a vinyl panel with a screen that goes in over it. It's like a stainless steel screen, and it keeps out the pine needles. It keeps out everything. And this company actually has like a no-claw guarantee. They'll come out and clean it and fix it and any issues you have for the life of your house. And they also, I think it's transferable, so if you ever sell your house. But it's called Leaf Filter. We just saw it, my wife and I saw it at the home show. We had it put in last year. Haven't had an issue since.
Wow, great. Well, thanks for the insight. I greatly appreciate it. You know, my concern is also she was very much worried about the gutter and all the debris and everything else, but also the tree root system. If the thing is up close to your house, that can cause problems from that perspective. But again, what was the name of this gutter cover?
It's called Leaf Filter.
LeafFilter.
Leaf Filter.
All right. Thanks, Shane. Greatly appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you. You can find it online and at any of the home shows. And actually, the guy that came out to my house and sold it to me, his name is Jay, and I actually have his card right here. And his number's 314-434-2010 if anybody wants to call him. Because, it's the best thing I've ever seen. It absolutely works.
Well, great. Thanks, Shane.
It's in there.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We will be back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we got a little less than 10 minutes to go. If you do have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Going back to that University of Missouri Integrated Pest Management newsletter that they send out routinely, this is a study that wasn't done by the University of Missouri, but I found out this is a study. this is, you know, it was kind of related to some of the things that they do research on. And this one was on spiders. And worldwide, guess how many metric tons of debris, meaning invertebrates, you know, like insects and stuff, that spiders consume every year? 400 million metric tons of bugs. So when you see a spider, don't panic. In this, you know, in this newsletter, they showed, you know, ones that are local spiders, you know, the brown recluse and the black lady, black widow, and all this other stuff. And then some other ones, daddy long legs, they can't bite or do anything. But it was just interesting that they kind of summarized it on how important spiders are really for the environment. But 400 million metric tons of bugs, 90% of them, you know, consumed by spiders. Amazing. Althea from Jennings, how are you today?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'm calling. Could you tell me how to root a sweet potato plant? I mean, a sweet potato.
So you're trying to root regular sweet potatoes, or you're trying to just grow the ornamental type sweet potatoes?
Well, it's a regular sweet potato, but I'm just using it for show. Leaves are beautiful.
Well, there are some that have very colorful leaves and everything else. You can buy those at the garden center. But what you can do with this one is, I mean, even as kids, this is what we did. We stuck them in, you know, more or less mason jars of water. We had toothpicks so they wouldn't get all the way down in there. Just let the thing really, you know, get a bunch of roots going. And as soon as you start to see a whole lot of roots, then you can take it outside and put it in a pot or put it in the ground.
But how long does it take to root?
It's going to take a little while. You're going to be, you know, it's going to be a little bit frustrating, you know, but ultimately it's going to come around. Or you can go to your garden center. I don't know which garden center you go to, but and see if they would have some, you know, because, I mean, there are places, garden centers that sell seed potatoes, and they may sell seed. In other words, that's starting potatoes. And so they may have some starting sweet potatoes, too. But there are the ornamental sweet potatoes that have chartreuse-colored leaves, that have maroon-colored leaves. But if you just want to grow one for green leaves, then I would say just root it in a jar of water.
Okay, well, it's been in there for 2 weeks.
And no roots yet?
No.
Is it in a sunny window?
It's, I didn't cut it. Are you supposed to cut it in half?
No, you don't need to do that. So just, you know, make sure that the skinniest point is down in the water. You know, it's got about 3 or 4 inches upcoming, but it could take, you know, I mean, the water temperature, that's why I'm saying is in a sunny window. That's going to, you know, help trigger some of the root growth. And depending upon how old this one is and everything else, it may not. I mean, there's been times I remember just doing this as a kid for fun. And there was some sweet potatoes that never produced any roots at all. Other ones, you know, did pretty well. But in 2 weeks, I wouldn't expect to see a whole lot, to be honest.
Okay, then. Well, I'll just keep watching for the roots.
Right. And they're going to be really thin, you know, like almost like white threads.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Althea. Let's go now to Judy in Warson Woods. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Love your show. Love the information you give. It's very useful. I have two questions. One about, you were talking about pH in the lawns and yards. What about spreading ashes in yards and beds? Is that a good thing or not?
It's not necessarily all that good unless you've had a soil test done and you know that you ash. First of all, you don't put a whole lot of ash. You just
Right.
put a light sprinkling on it. But ashes are basically calcium. They're, you know, potash or potassium and phosphorus. If your soil already has a lot of those things in it, putting the ashes down is not going to be to the advantage of your plant material, and it may be to the disadvantage of your plant material. So a lot of soil tests are indicating there could be extravagant levels of phosphorus and potassium, and that actually dehydrates root systems and causes more problems than good. So just routinely taking ashes out is not going to do anything at all. And ashes, for the most part, only add chemistry to your soil. They don't add any kind of structural type, you know, qualities at all, like a compost or something like that. So I just be a little, you know, somewhat concerned about just spreading ashes for the sake of ashes.
Right. I just, a few from the fireplace, thought maybe that would be a good thing, but all right. The second question is about perennials. planning for beds that maybe get only about 2 hours of sun. What are some good choices?
Any of the ferns, for the most part. My favorite fern happens to be the Japanese painted fern because it has silver fronds. Obviously, the hostas. You have a lot of, I mean, so probably those two would be the ones that I would, you know, consider most on more or less the top of the list. There's other ones, you know, perennial-wise. Columbine can take the shade circumstance. There's trilliums. There's other ones as well. But for the most part, the, you know, in the shade situation, you're really looking at more foliage than you're looking at flowers. There's, you know, a plant called toad flax, Tricertus, which blooms later on. It has kind of a wild look to it. So just look at Tricertus, T-R-I-C-Y-R-T-I-S, and, you know, look at it online and just kind of check it out.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike.
Sure. Now let's stay close by and go into Glendale, and that's where Sally lives. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
Hi.
My Japanese maple that I wanted the leaves to go in front of my house are now in front of my roof.
So in other words, I guess, you got a variety that got big.
Yes, sir.
So
can we prune all the way back?
Don't prune it back all the way to the trunk. No, definitely don't do that. But you can certainly cut it back so you can get it below, let's say, the eave or the drip line of your, you know, more or less your gutters or your house or whatever. But yeah, it can be pruned. With the maples, I prefer to prune them in the summertime versus the wintertime. There, even with the Japanese maple, there seems to be, I mean, it's not harmful or anything else. There's just a lot of sap flow. So that would be my concern. But yeah, it can be pruned.
Okay, if we decide to take it out altogether, is that difficult?
It depends upon how big the trunk is. So if it's going up over your gutters, then it's probably a fairly big trunk. So it's not going to be a real easy job. I won't fool you. So you're going to have to like dig the soil away, cut the root systems, and then finally, let's say, move it around until you can finally get it so it's going to come free. But it's not an easy job by any means.
Real quick, I'm deciding to raise the beds around my tree, build the wall up so there's a little definition.
I wouldn't pile any kind of soil, any kind of anything up on the bark. You could cause some major problems to the bark. So, I mean, it sounds nice that you want to have a raised bed or, you know, let's say an edger or whatever around it, but just don't pile anything up on bark because bark, you know, it's exposed to sunlight and air and everything else because it needs to be. If you start covering that up, you could have some rot problems. You could have other problems as well. So just watch out about doing that.
Well, this was around my pin oak.
Okay, that's fine. It's still going to, I mean, bark is bark. It doesn't matter. So,
okay, but my question was, the hostas are there. If we decide to raise the bed, how do we take out the hostas?
Well, you can just dig them up. Dig them up and put them in pots. But again, I would just be cautious about raising the bed. You can put them back in there if you want to, and maybe it'll be okay. The tree is used to having its bark exposed, and you start piling soil or whatever you choose up against it, it may cause, it's not going to be immediate by any means, but just watch out about doing that. So thanks, Sally. And Ada, I don't think we can get you today because we're basically out of time. So it looks like the snow has stopped, even though Mr. Kelly said there was a winter advisory for a few more minutes. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
A proud partner of the 2018 100 PGA Championship at Belle Reve Country Club.
KMOX, KMOX HD St. Louis, KZK HD3 St. Louis.